Yes, President Pottering, we are listening to you.
Yes, we are listening.
So techniques are only the second best solution. The best solution is if we meet in person. Okay, Honorable Secretary of State for European Affairs, dear Anna Paula Zacharias, it's a great honor for us to have the opportunity to meet with you virtually today, although we regret we cannot hold this visit in person as initially foreseen. Over the past weeks, we have had several opportunities to listen to your interventions within the Conference on the Future of Europe. I want to congratulate you as co-chair of the Executive Board of the Conference on the Future of Europe on the impressive work you have done in the last few months under this presidency, together with the other two co-chairs, Dubravka Suika and Guy Verhofstadt. I want to inform you that our association, the former Members Association, established a reflection group on the future of the European Union, composed of eminent and experienced former members of the European Parliament. The group will be responsible for monitoring the discussions and work of the Conference on the Future of Europe, providing its contributions and proposals on the most imperative issues with the involvement of our association's members. We assembled for the first time on the 22nd of April, and we will do so again on the 30th of June. And our reflection group consists of 9 people, and we have assistance from a professor of the University of Leuven, who will coordinate together with Elisabetta Fung, the director of the former Members Association, our work. And finally, we will present a paper with our proposals. As a former Members Association, we are happy and willing to contribute given our members' expertise and experience, and the fact that we represent the institutional and political memory of the only institution that is directly elected by European citizens. On the European level, of course, the national parliaments are directly elected as well. Our association is fully engaged in using its platform and close partners to engage in reflection and to stimulate dialogue about the future of Europe in an open and inclusive way, in particular with youth, building bridges with the new generations. And we just had a discussion with the young generation, the representatives of the young generation of Portugal. We are currently concerned about possible capture of the reflection process by short-term political gains and the narrow time frame. Instead, we believe that the conference should be open-ended, but with a clear plan for the follow-up to its conclusion. So the conference should not only be a discussion process, we need really conclusions to find what we want to change and where what we want to be better on the European, maybe even on the national, regional and local level as well. National parliaments should be fully involved in this process in close cooperation with the European Parliament, as we have done during the European Convention on the Future of Europe, presided by our former colleagues and friend, President Valéry Giscard d'Estaing. We believe that the conference should concentrate on broad questions related to European integration, on how the European Union can be more efficient, how the European Union can increase its capacity to act, and how the European Union can deliver what citizens expect without excluding the possibility of treaty change being able to adapt to the new challenges. I personally convinced we need some changes of the Lisbon Treaty, for instance, in the field, just to give an example, in the field of health. So we have to make the conclusions concerning the pandemic of coronavirus. We also hope that lessons will be learned from this current COVID-19 pandemic in the field of health, as I just said. As I said previously, we liked your motto, time to deliver a fair, green, and digital recovery. Let us keep united and work all together at various levels and in our different positions to make this happen. Thank you so much, Madam Secretary of State. And we are very happy to have the discussion with you. And I don't know, unfortunately, Portuguese, but I can say thank you. Obrigado.
Thank you so much. Muito obrigada, Sr. Presidente. It's a big pleasure indeed to be this afternoon with you and also with the members of the Association of Former Members of Parliament. My warm welcome to you all to Portugal, although I am in Brussels. As a matter of fact, I've walked the European map along this last few days. I was on the 19th in Strasbourg for the Conference on the Future of Europe. On the 22nd, I was in Luxembourg for the General Affairs Council. And today I'm here in Brussels for the last debate in the European Parliament. We just had a debate. I just arrived from the Parliament where we had a very interesting debate on the implementation of the Office of the European Prosecutor. Today and tomorrow we have the European Council, a very important one where the leaders will also discuss again. Finally, 2 years. It took us 2 years. Years to bring migration into the agenda. So it was a long time, and it seems that the leaders will also discuss something very, very important, though it's not in the agenda, which is the rule of law and this situation that we are living we are experiencing in Hungary particularly. So it is really a pleasure to be with you all. And I really want to thank this opportunity of speaking with you, of listening to you. It was very interesting to listen already your reflections on the Conference of the Future of Europe. Indeed, this should be a conference for the citizens, with the citizens, but of course, it's also an exercise where we need to bring the elected representatives, be from the national parliaments, be it from the European Parliament. And I want to thank the Portuguese Assembleia da República and the European Parliament for the excellent cooperation that the Portuguese presidency had experienced during these last 6 months. I can't believe that it's over. It's almost over. It passed so quickly. Today I was talking with my colleagues and saying it looked like it was yesterday that we are saying, oh my God, how are we going to do this in the middle of the pandemic? And here we are. We did it. And we did it in the very close articulation with the European Parliament. Our Prime Minister came to Brussels at least 5 times to meet with the President of the European Parliament. And I participated in 48 debates during this 6 months. 48 debates plus meetings in different commissions and informal discussions. And we had a huge number of trilogues to unblock a couple of dossiers that were blocked for many years, like the e-privacy, like the country by country report on the big important question of the transparency on fiscal terms of the big enterprises that we were able to unblock. And I would say that this presidency, it's already our fourth presidency, but it was different. It was different for a couple of circumstances. The first one, it's because this presidency was our first in the realm of the Lisbon Treaty. And this meant one element of the former Portuguese presidencies were all in terms of external relations. We always have been good at this. And this time, external relations were dealt by the President of the European Council and by our colleagues from the External Action Service and the High Representative. So the role of the presidency in these dossiers is clearly different from what it used to be before the Treaty of Lisbon. And but with this, it was very good. I think we worked quite well. The other element, as I mentioned already, is the relation with European Parliament. This relation is now much, much more closer. And And I think the sheer numbers show this, that the relation between the Council, the Commission, and the European Parliament is now very, very strong. And there is a working everyday work between the three institutions. But I would say that the biggest challenge that we faced was the pandemic, the COVID-19. At the beginning of the presidency, we thought that things were okay, that we could start again meeting. We were in January 2020, and immediately, 2 or 3 weeks later, after the start, there was the second wave in Portugal. And we had to reshuffle the agenda, to reshuffle the logistics, and go from what we had expected to be a normal, you know, as normal as possible presidency. We had to become fully digital, and then at a certain moment become you know, a mixed thing between the digital and the physical meetings, and finally now full meetings already. And today was really good to see the Secretary General of the United Nations in the European Parliament with a lot of people. It was like coming back to life. Yeah, it was very, very interesting. And for the Portuguese presidency, it was a very fortunate coincidence that he was re-elected and that he appeared before the parliament just in the last days of the Portuguese presidency. I think it was really, really very, very relevant for all of us. Well, as you mentioned, our motto was time to deliver a green digital fair recovery. So all that the newspapers asked us now is, did you manage? Did you deliver? What have you done? And what else could I say? If I worked on this intensely for 6 months, I would like to say that yes, that we have delivered. And we have delivered, I would say, in four big areas. The first, on COVID coordination and helping the EU citizens to go back as possibly as it was to their normal lives. I think that we started the year with just the good news that vaccines have been discovered. And in 6 months, we managed to produce these vaccines and to produce them in such a scale that so far, as of today, we have managed to distribute 300 million vaccines in Europe and export another group of 300 million vaccines to 48 different countries. So I think this was really a huge endeavor, and we did it together. We did it together. And the merit was for the European Commission, that's for sure. That's it was Madame von der Leyen who and her team who managed to do this. But of course, I think the Council also supported, helped. And here we are 6 months later with the COVID certificate approved, with vaccination campaigns going on all over Europe at a big pace, and finally with this idea that we're getting out of this tunnel and that we are recovering health all over Europe. And at the same time, this goes hand in hand with the other block, with the second block, which is economic recovery. It was a fantastic work of the German presidency at the end of last year to approve the biggest possible package that we could envisage. A couple of months before that, we are fighting for a couple of euros for the multi-annual financial framework. And as COVID got us, there was this feeling that we need to work together, and we need to work together to face what has been seen and is clearly here, the biggest crisis, the biggest economic and social crisis since the Second World War. So we were able to work together to approve the MFF, with good numbers and with programs that are very important for all of us, with a EU health program, with InvestEU, Erasmus, Horizon Europe. I've signed these all today. I've signed them all, finally. It's been approved. And I think this was the merit of the Portuguese presidency. The German presidency approved the package, and now we manage to put on the ground all these regulations, make them real on the ground. And the second block it was the recovery and resilience mechanism. In these 6 months, we approved the mechanism. The 27 member states concluded the ratification of the own resources decision. We have received more than 23 national plans already. 12 of them have been approved by the Commission, and the Commission was able to go to the markets to borrow the 750 billion euros, not all in a trench, but bits by bits. But they started the process, and here we are. Hopefully, the money will get to the economy, to the governments, to the citizens, to the enterprises for recovery starting in July. And here is the third block. We did this. We did this looking towards the future. It's recovery, but it's recovery looking at the way of creating a new and better model for our societies. A society that is greener, that is more innovative, and that is fair. And here, on the green side, I think one of the hallmarks of the Portuguese presidency is the approval of the climate law. Today, this morning, the other debate that I had in Parliament was about the approval by the Parliament of the climate law. It was a very political debate. Some say it's too much, some say it's too less, but but we managed to get this pragmatic, it's very pragmatic piece of legislation. Mr. Timmermans, the vice president, was referred to it as the law of laws, in the sense that now the work starts to make all the sectorial laws and regulations that would allow us to really implement the Green Deal. But it's done, and we're very proud. We're very proud of it. The other thing is that we need to be more innovative. We need to bring in some strategic industries to Europe, back to some production chains that are ours and that are more interconnected in Europe. Better digitalization. We need to modernize and make all the innovation of our public administration. One of the lessons learned from this crisis is that we need a good functioning public administration. We need hospitals, we need education, we need even the finance with the services that normally function for citizens. And we were able to have to keep this getting in touch with the citizens. So digital services, digital markets are fundamental to renew our common digital market. And we also have long discussions about artificial intelligence, about digital democracy, how to make this and how to fight cyber attacks, how to become more, you know, with a security environment also for the digital world. And in this idea of creating this new way of taking into account these double transitions, digital and green transition, we cannot forget that this will have social consequences. So we need to do this for people. We need to take on board the social priority, the European social model. And this is what we have tried to achieve and push for in the Porto summit. this notion of social justice that interacts with all policy areas and try to not to leave anyone behind. And I would say that this brings me to the last two dossiers. The one, I think it's central, which is the rule of law. We need resilience, of course, in terms of better mechanisms for cooperation within Europe to fight crisis, but resilience is about our fundamental values too. So make sure that our fundamental rights are in place, the right, you know, and about human rights and about the rule of law and about democracy. And here, the Conference on the Future of Europe brings in a new way, a new form also of dialogue, direct dialogue with the citizens. And the fourth block is the external relations. And as I said at the beginning, the external relations now do not belong in such a traditional way to the member states as such, but we managed to do a couple of very important things. Number one, it was during our presidency that we established this new framework for the relations with the UK. We signed the trade and cooperation agreement with the UK. We had the EU-US summit, long-awaited summit. This was very good because it will bring us a new vision for our strategic partnership with the United States. We organized the summit with India at the level of 27 member states. We worked with Africa. I am always a bit sad because we didn't engage with Latin America as we should. And one of the reasons is trade, because there is a lot of people saying that we cannot do this Mercosur agreement. We can talk about this a bit further. And I think that all in all, we worked also on enlargement, and this was a very important issue. We just had the first IGC meetings with Serbia and Montenegro under the new methodology for enlargement. This was important. And finally, today, the leaders are discussing migration. And they are discussing migration on this external perspective and see what can we do really to look into the root causes of migration. And so I think all in all, we delivered. I think that we delivered. We delivered, and we delivered. And I think that I will cherish these 6 months for some years to come, even if it was a lot of work, even if it was a lot of stress. But it was also a lot of learning and a huge appreciation for what Europe really means. So thank you very much. I hope that I was not too long, and I am eager to listen to you and answer to your questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Madame Zacharias. And you are representing the presidency, so you are Madame President as well. And I want to congratulate you not only for this speech, and I admire your optimism, and one really sees in your face that you liked your work and you like your work and you do it with enthusiasm. And we need Europeans like you. And if you allow me, before I ask my colleagues to make some remarks which are connected with Portugal and myself. You mentioned this is a fourth Portuguese presidency, and in two presidencies, the second one and the third one, I was very much involved. In the second one, your prime minister was Guterres, who was now re-elected as the Secretary General of the United Nations. And I was chairman of the EPP, the European People's Party group at that time. And we had the difficulties with the discussion about the Austrian government in 2000. And I remember discussing this with your prime minister. And I'm very happy, if you allow me to say, I'm on the board of the Charlemagne Prize in Aachen. And we decided last year or 2 years ago that the Secretary General of the United Nations, Guterres, should get the Charlemagne Prize, and I'm very happy about that. I never forget the discussions when José Manuel Durão Barroso was elected president of the European Commission, I was chairman of our group. It was so difficult, but finally we succeeded. And then what was the real highlight for me was when you had the presidency in the second part of 2007, your prime minister, who was president of the European Council, I cannot pronounce it in Portuguese, but I say it in German, Socrates. Socrates was the president of the European Council, and Barroso was the president of the Commission. I was president of the European Parliament, and we signed together the 12th of December 2007, the Charter of Fundamental Rights in the European Parliament in Strasbourg. So you made an important signature today. We did it the 12th of December 2007. And one day later, there was a great signing of the treaty, Lisbon Treaty in Lisbon. I did not sign it, but the heads of state or the prime minister did it. And I think and I ask you to look at it, I think in front of this monastery, Geronimos, there is a marble monument, and the rain is coming down, and please take care that the monument will be still there in 50 years with all the signature of the people who signed the treaty and the presence of the European institutions. And then my last word concerning your presidency in 2007, for me it was like a miracle when we opened the 21st of December 2007, the borders to Poland and the Baltic states, the Czech Republic. This was like a miracle. And I think we should not forget today, when we have so big problems again with the rule of law, and you will discuss it on the summit, that we have achieved a lot. And what we have achieved should give us courage that we can solve the problems of the present as well. So I'm stopping now. I could continue to express my admiration for your country, for Portugal, but I will stop now, and I ask our colleagues to take the floor. And once again, Madam President Ana Paula Zacharias, for your great presentation and for your enthusiasm. So I am very happy that I saw him already on the screen, my very good friend and colleague in the European Parliament, Carlos Coelho. Please, Carlos.
Thank you so much, Hans Gert. I also want to thank Secretary of State Ana Paula Zacharias for her great speech, but mainly for her great commitment in this presidency. There were some moments where we saw her. There were a lot of other moments where we didn't see her, but we knew she was there in a very discreet way, as she doing a very important job. I think a huge part of the success it's due to the commitment, to the work, to the wise lady Ana Paula Zacharias is. She was as an ambassador, and she is now as member of the government. I think it was very clear from her point of view what is her reading about the success of this presidency. I would like to make a question like a journalist, taking credit for the work she personally did. I would like that Ana Paula could tell us what was the moment, the success she cherishes more, she's most satisfied with, because it was not expected or the result was better than she was foreseeing. Because it was a surprise, or because the final decision is stronger than she believed it could be. And in the opposite way, what is the biggest disappointment? When she faces these 6 months, what she's said because the presidency couldn't succeed, or because the results are less than expected. I want to underline, we know the presidency is a presidency. The president doesn't take decisions. To take decisions are the institutions. The president cannot force the member states to agree in something. And definitely the president cannot force the parliament and the council to co-decide on the legislative table. But so part of the problems of the presidency, it's because they are victims of the pandemic issue and the lack of will of other institutions. So when I look at the work of the presidency, what was done and what was not done, I'm not blaming the presidency, but I would love to know what is the personal opinion of Ana Paula Zacarias about the success and the what was badly in this presidency. Thank you so much.
Okay, obrigado, Carlos, for your question. And I propose that we ask three colleagues and that the Madame Zacarias give an answer then, if you agree. So the second one would be Peter Price and then Margarita Sagewitz-Suter. But first, Peter Price. Peter, please.
I think what you've told us, Secretary of State, about what's happened during the Portuguese presidency certainly gives you every reason to smile when talking to us. However, I'm going to, and my colleague has just asked, I think, the central core questions, and I'm going to raise an issue which has been one of the difficulties that has cropped up during the last 6 months, and it's the Northern Ireland Protocol. And it's a problem as yet unsolved. I think the Northern Ireland Protocol itself had an inherent divergence in its concept, because on the one hand, it was ensuring Northern Ireland could remain within the single market and customs union. And on the other hand, it was to remain a full part of the United Kingdom market. And in the government's wish to be able to diverge from EU rules, that created a very curious situation, to say the least of it. And I'm wondering how you think, from your experience of the last 6 months, how this might be taken forward constructively. Has the UK's unilateral action so undermined confidence that it's becoming impossible to be able to deal with the practical measures which might help the situation? Are we faced with conflict in Northern Ireland, a return to days that we all wish to put the lid on, never to return to? Or is there a way out? What's your opinion?
Thank you so much, Peter Price from the United Kingdom. And now Margarita Stakiewicz-Jutta from Lithuania. Please, Margarita.
Yeah, thank you, President. I would like to ask a question a little bit not about the European Union issues, but global issues. As Secretary Gutierrez today was in the parliament, and he is from Portugal, and of course enjoys support of his country and of European Union. However, at the beginning of new term, it seems to me that it's good to remind the issues which European Union addressing to itself: rule of law, democracy, human rights, the basic values which are included into United Nations Declaration, but somehow it's fell apart. Details are focused on some small things. There is no, again, UN forces to sort out the conflicts there in Africa, everywhere. Trade in arms, a lot of different issues, which actually was the priority of European Union, now somehow became not a priority. And the European Union and you as a presidency can ask these questions, which I think could contribute a lot to the solving of migration crisis and different other issues, health problems and so on, because United Nations is not playing the role it was decided to establish. It's somehow now it's too many different initiatives and general talking and less focus on that main issues. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Margarita Stakovic-Jude. I have only one more question or colleague who asked for the floor, and I would propose that we hear him and then we listen to the Secretary of State, to Madame Zacharias, and then we step by step come to an end. So it's Robert Morland. Please, Robert.
Micro.
Robert Morland, please.
You have to unmute.
All right.
Robert,
thank you,
please.
Thank you very much, Secretary of State. You will be relieved to hear I'm not going to ask you about the Irish Protocol. I could make some comments, but the news actually this morning was quite good on that. I'm going to use two words that I noticed you haven't used at all. And I would have thought it would have been they would be two words that would be quite a big influence on the European Union over the last 6 months. And the two words are President Biden. And surely when you mention climate change, but clearly this must be influencing your approach on that, obviously in a beneficial way. And that's one of the examples that I would use. And incidentally, when you talked about the debate with different views, whether some were today being more supportive and some still critical, I think actually the opinion, certainly the expert opinion, is in the direction we really actually are going to have to do more. But there are other issues we could raise, which I hope you won't say is not your responsibility, but I think quite a lot of people were unhappy about the China investment deal. And I lead on to President Biden in that respect. Is clearly what should be happening in the European Union is that there should be a lot of discussions with the US on China. We both need to operate, as we say in English, on the same hymn sheet. We basically, it would be very bad if we had two different approaches. Well, I could go on, but I think there are quite a lot of things one could say in which surely the Biden administration is influencing what you're now doing.
Okay, thank you so much, Robert Morland, and now President Zacharias, please.
Well, thank you very much. I think I am still in the European Parliament. This is a lot big debate. Okay, so let's see. Let's look at first the very interesting question about what was the most, what did we achieve, or what was more difficult or unexpected? I remember two moments that in where I felt, oh my God, we're not going to do this. It's not happening. And this was at the beginning when we started discussing the Conference on the Future of Europe. That it was so difficult to unblock the negotiations, to come with an interinstitutional solution, with this idea of having the three presidents presiding and not just one person as it was sought at the beginning. And then have the executive board also with the same structure, and then proceed and advance. Because the culture of the three institutions is so different. It was very interesting to see Mr. Guy Verhofstadt pushing for the parliament and pushing for the national parliaments, and then the commission always talking about the citizens, the need to engage the citizens, and then the member states a bit cautious, saying, what is all this about? Where does this lead us to? How are we going to cope with this? It was, there was a moment where I thought, we're never gonna make it. And then we did. We had the this joint declaration that was approved by the three institutions. And we started working, you know, in a very cooperative way. And we put all things together. And finally, we managed to have the first citizens event in Lisbon on the 17th of June. And we had the first plenary on the 19th of June. And well, the conference started. It's a huge responsibility. I think this conference is a huge responsibility, and we have to address this with a lot of humbleness and also with a lot of pragmatism and a certain degree of courage, because we open a new avenue. This avenue, as we are opening it, this contact, direct contact with the citizens, listening to this panel of 800 European citizens that are supposed to put forward their ideas, and on the basis of which the plenary has to work. And as you were saying, President Pottering, at the beginning, we need to have a follow-up. We need to give these people, consequences of what they decided. We need to bring in new legislation, eventually even changing the treaties if it need be. And I really and sincerely hope, for the benefit of Europe, for the benefit of European institutions, that we can deliver, because otherwise we open a box, and if you close it, it will never close. It will not close. And we can, instead of opening a nice open movement, looking into the future, we can give space for populists and others to step in. So we really need to be very careful with this. This is a very important issue. And I'm glad that we started. And I'm glad that we started well. The other moment where I was a bit skeptic was at the beginning, when we were discussing the Porto social compromise or commitment, the Porto social commitment with the social partners, with the civil society, and at the same time negotiating with the Commission and the Parliament. I thought, it's going to be impossible. And yet, here it is, the Porto social commitment. The discussions with the Parliament were very tough, because the Parliament had approved a report that was much stronger in language, in its determination to go forward in the social realm, and the member states were very cautious on this, at the same time have the civil society and the social partners negotiating a text. It was very difficult, but we managed. And we managed to have now three clear targets, as I imagine that Mr. Vieira da Silva explained to you in the other debate, with a target for employment, a target for skills, and a target for reduction of poverty. So these were the two moments where I felt, oh my God, we're never going to make it, and yet we've done it. So it's a good feeling. Things that could have been better. I think I mentioned one that is dear to my heart, because I love Latin America. I served there a couple of times, and I think we are losing this very strong connection that Europe should have with Latin America. It's Latin America is where our roots are, really. And because of Mercosur, because of this trade deal that is not moving, and we've been negotiating this for 20 years, and it's not moving. And I think that this generated not very good feeling, and we should do better and more with Latin America, including in terms of cooperation for the fight against COVID-19. We're not sending them as many vaccines as we should. We are focusing in our neighborhood, which is important, I understand, focusing on the Western Balkans. We're focusing also on Africa, which is important too, but we're leaving a little bit of Latin America for different reasons behind. Then, if I start talking about the Northern Ireland protocol and the difficulties of our relation with the UK. Whoa, this would be a very interesting thing to debate for a couple of hours. I had a very interesting discussion with a group from Northern Ireland that is called the North South East West Group. And one of the ladies that participated in that group, she told me, "Oh, Mrs. Zacharias, it's very interesting and very good to see you again, because when I went to Ireland, I visit the border, and someone from this group was there to talk with me. And I, you know, in the middle of the visit, I didn't even understood." But she said, "Now we are here meeting online, and you have came to Ireland, and we met with us. So in a couple of years, you met with us twice. I've never seen anyone from the UK." And I think this is one difficulty, that the people of Northern Ireland feel that, or some people in Northern Ireland feel that they need to be involved, they need to be more involved in all this process. But I am confident that we will find a way. We always find a way in the end. There is a clear understanding from the UK part and from the European Union that one thing is clear: no way that we can go back to the conflict days. And we have to do whatever it takes so that we can engage in a conversation that allows us to talk and do not do other things. So, and I think that we are all very conscious of this. There are difficulties, but I, as you mentioned, practical measures can be taken, and I am sure that we will be able to sort this out. Pacta sunt servanda. It's a very important sentence, and I think that we all abide by this, that there was an agreement, the withdrawal agreement was signed, the trade and cooperation agreement is here. We have to make sure that we abide by it, and we find the practical measures to implement this. It is very important. There is something, still thinking about things that happened during the presidency that were difficult. There is one that I really regret, which is the relations with Switzerland, for instance. They decided to withdraw unilaterally from the negotiations with the European Union. It's really a pity. It's another country with whom we have a very important relation. Many communities, European community, people from the European community living in Switzerland. It's a pity that they left. There is no framework agreement, and now we are stuck with 120 different agreements, some of which very old, that need to be renegotiated. And so it's a pity that also a country like Switzerland, it's not in very good terms, or in the terms that we wish with the EU. On President Biden, oh, it is fantastic that we have someone on the other side of the Atlantic with whom we can engage. This is very good, because we can engage on climate change, we can engage on trade, we can engage on a strategic perspective with our relations with China, indeed, our relations with Russia. What do we do with Belarus? What do we do with the Balkans? So more than ever, I think it is important at this juncture finally to have someone on the White House and an administration with whom we can discuss and really interact. And here I go to the question of the MEP from Lithuania. For a couple of years, we were living in the world of strong men. And I think this had a toll in the way the world was moving, because we were at the same time dealing with many global issues, but these big egos were there to remind us that multilateralism should be at the center of our work, and yet it was, and it is, difficult. Our relations with Turkey are not at the best stage. We have the lowest possible relations at the moment with Russia. We have what we have in Venezuela. And Belarus is what it is. So, and China is more and more assertive. And not only assertive in their area, they become assertive in the world and expanding. And so I agree certainly with Margarita when she says that we have to defend the rule of law, we have to defend democracy, we have to defend the basic rights, values. We need to stand for this, because without this, we are lost and we lose our own identity. And we now see that this being undermined even in our own house. And this is very serious. It's not easy to tell a brother that you are not behaving the right way. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. But I think that we need to have this courage and to see and use the instruments that we have to make sure that, the members of our family behave. Because if we are not able to tell to the members of our family that they need to behave, how can we tell this to our neighbors and to people that live across the street? So we really need to look into this. And the United Nations have a role in here. And today, Secretary General Guterres mentioned it, talked about this extensively, saying, without this, we are lost. We cannot create a world that is green and innovative and a new, full of new possibilities without equality, without being able to share, without fairness, without the basic values of solidarity, of cherishing the rights for all of us. And the COVID-19 had, put us in a very awkward situation, because on one side, we all woke up to solidarity. Oh my God, if we do not help each other, we will all die. And this was fantastic on one side. But on the other hand, it opened the ground for some to say, this is the moment where I get power and I seize power with this. And this is terrible, and we need to make sure that this doesn't happen. So I think this would be my reflections. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam President Zacharias. And you spoke about strong men, but we have strong women as well. And I'm very happy about this. And you are a good example for this. And I want only at the end to make two comments. First, concerning the conference. I think the conference on the future of Europe cannot be only a discussion process. There must be conclusions, and they must be very concrete, and we should not exclude changes of the treaty. There should, of course, not be a new treaty. We need not a new treaty, but we need to extend the treaty, for instance, in the field of health or as far as majority voting is concerned in foreign policies, and you know all the details. So we should take the conference on the future of Europe very serious, and you will not finish your European work after your presidency. You will be still there, and I want to encourage you to make the Portuguese contribution to a great success. And secondly, the rule of law. I could not have said it better as you said it. We have to defend our values. If we do not defend our values anymore, then we will not have a European Union anymore. And if we do not defend the rule of law, and if we do not accept the decisions of the European High Court, and I think this is the most important, then the European Union will not have a future. So we should say to all those who are now challenging the rule of law in the European Union, that if we have different opinions, we will go to the European High Court. he will make, the European High Court will make a decision. And if a country does not accept these decisions, then this country begins to exclude itself from the European Union, and hopefully we can stay together. And there are some people in some member states who are just playing with our values, and you certainly as presidency will find the right procedure and the right language to resist these temptations of not accepting the rule of law, because that is what keeps us united and with what we can defend. As you said, we will lose our identity. This is exactly what is at stake. If we don't accept and defend our values, we will lose our identity. And finally, you spoke about humbleness, you spoke about courage, and I want to add the self-confidence as well. Self-confidence must always be combined with humbleness. And we know the European Union is not a paradise, but it is the better part of the world. And I think we can be proud what we have achieved. And because we have achieved so much, we have a good basis to look to the future. Madam President Zacharias, I wish you, I wish your country all the best. And now I want to thank the Portuguese Parliament and the government, not only you, but the Parliament as well, for its great cooperation, and our office of the European Parliament in Lisbon as well, for the excellent preparation of our meeting. And now I have the pleasure that we will hear a musical, a musical video performed by the Portuguese fado singer Caminho. It's a musical video about an emblematic Lisbon neighborhood, Alfama. I hope it will work well. And with this, I say obrigado, obrigado, obrigado.
É mais modesta e pôs a saia da rita, que só é vestida em dias de festa. Beitos, escadinhas, ruas estreitinhas, onde em cada esquina não vai dormir. Trombas pelas vielas e em todas elas perfume de manjerico. Rios, gargalhadas, fados, desgarradas, pôs em alfa. Raparigas de olhos cansados ainda aproveitam o ensejo para mais um beijo dos namorados. Já se ouvem sinos tocando, todos cantando, a desgarrada. E mesmo assim, dona Alfama só volta para a cama quando é madrugada. Beites, escadinhas, ruas estreitinhas, onde em cada esquina um bailarico. Trovas pelas vielas e em todas elas perfume de manjerico. Risos, gargalhadas, fados, desgarradas, hoje em Alfama é um demónio. E em cada canto um suave encanto de um trono de Santo António. Perfume de manjerico, risos, gargalhadas, fados, garrados, hoje é Alfama.
because of your ideas during this movie.